I'm Dr. Rod Berger. Sit back, grab a cup of coffee, and explore some of today's most pressing educational issues through the experienced eyes of leading education personalities. Welcome to Coffeed. We are continuing our conversation with author Thomas Newkirk. We want to make sure that everyone knows that our interview today is brought to you by Chuzito. Search and learn because the web is not a library and search engines are not librarians. Go to chuzito.com. That's C-H-O-O-S-I-T-O.com. Well, Tom, I know in our last piece we talked, obviously, literacy, information literacy, and different concepts around that in today's day and age in education. But you wrote a book a number of years ago, Misreading Masculinity, and I just want to kick it off with that. Teaching literacy to boys, where are we right now?
I think we still have problems with that. I think that boys start out slower, and I think a lot of times they get a feeling that that's not something they're good at. I think kids that develop identities early on. They know what they're good at. They know what they're not good at. And I think that often they see themselves as behind and decide that reading and writing are not for them.
And what role, now you did touch on, and it was interesting to read some of the reviews. I mean, this came post-Columbine and looking at the ways in which we sort of focus on boys, and we were obviously at that point very concerned about violence in our writing. Have we made any improvements in that? Because I know that that can be a big detractor for boys who feel like that's adventure to them. They want to write about things that they're interested in.
I think it still is a problem because I think that a lot of times in schools, there's a reluctance to have kids write fiction. And if they write fiction, they're going to borrow plots and what's called violence. Boys call it action. And so I think there's a reluctance to let them do that because teachers are fearful that if there is some violence in the writing, does that mean this kid is violent? So I think that there's still that kind of mild censorship going on.
When you look back to when you were writing the book and you were interviewing the young people, both boys and girls, what do you take away with, you know, from it even years later, just in the honesty or the approach that they experienced your questions and interest in their lives as young people?
A couple things. One, that they, you know, I mentioned this before, that they want to create these fictional worlds. They want to live in them. They want to, like, bring their friends in them. And so that was, they want a life that's bigger than the life that they're leading. So I think when we say, okay, we just want you to write nonfiction, we just want you to write, about your life, that's limiting. And then I think maybe even more than that, I just loved how precise these kids were when they talked about violence. That no kid wants uncontrolled violence. That's scary. But when they talked about what the limits were and what should be allowed and what shouldn't be allowed, I thought these are discussions we should have with not just boys, but girls as well. You know, what's appropriate? What's useful? What are you really trying to do in this story? That we should have those conversations and not just prohibitions.
Does that lead into the quote from Charles McCaffrey, the forensic psychiatrist, that, quote, probably the most dangerous mammal on the planet is the adolescent male. Does that drive our work and interaction with boys in a school environment to this point about literacy and our fear that it is violence and not action-oriented writing?
Oh, I think so. And I think that, you know, that's a terrible way to approach boys, is that they're just this powder keg ready to explode. And I think if you think that in terms of males, if you think in terms of African-American males, you know, it's that to the exponential factor, that this fear that they're explosive, they're violent, and that they have to be, you know, kind of contained. I think that's a terrible, terrible way to view boys. And one thing I tried to write against in the book was this sense that boys are troubled, boys are deeply anguished. I think some are, but I think a lot of boys love being boys. They love the vitality, they love the energy, they love the aggressive play that they have. They're not sick, and we shouldn't be treating them as, you know, having this deep sickness about being in a boy culture. I thought that was a real kind of a negative way of viewing boys, and I wanted to get away from that.
Over the years, Tom, what has the response been from educators? Have they been supporters of the book? Have they, has it drawn ire from different segments, whether it's the female side of the education equation or the males? I mean, what's been the response from the teacher side?
I think maybe a little bit of relief that they could allow some of these things to happen and it wouldn't be the end of the world, or it wouldn't be that you're promoting violence. You know, I can't say that it's transformed the world. I wish I could you know, claim that. But I think that, and I think with parents, there's a sense of, okay, I don't have to be quite so tight about the limits that I'm putting on boys. That some of these things are okay. They've been okay for a long time. Kids have liked comic books. Kids have liked action. These things are part of growing up. And it doesn't mean that your kid is going to be homicidal or suicidal. You know, that some of these things, some of these natural forms of play should be allowed. And if we stop allowing them and make sure and don't allow certain kinds of activity, I think we're repressing boys, and it's not a healthy situation. So I think there's a kind of a sense of relief.
What about just the experience of reading and writing? And I saw where, you know, a young person had said, well, I've read that. There are words on the page. That means I've read that. I mean, this reading in isolation, the experience of isolation and reading and writing, and obviously counterintuitive to the social nature of boys.
Well, I think that one way to get boys to like reading is to have groups of boys reading the same kinds of books, and then it becomes social. So then research to show that, you know, if all boys are kind of trading books and reading books in common, that really makes it social. I think just sitting down by yourself, reading by yourself, is not terribly appealing to a lot of boys. A lot of students, they see it as isolating, and we still have the expressions, maybe not as common as we used to, like somebody's a bookworm, you know, that they're almost like not even a vertebrate. They're just by themselves alone reading, and that's kind of not a healthy thing to do. So I think there's still, for some people in our culture, the sense of that kind of isolation isn't really healthy.
Now, Tom, I hope that the answer, I hope I know the right answer to this, or that that we know the path it's going down, but I would hope that colleges of education would embrace a book like yours or similar books and authors like yourself to help train and integrate this topic with the next generation of teachers. I hope you say yes, that has happened in the years since you wrote it.
Well, I'd love to have it happen more, but I think that the whole question of boys has become a topic of discussion. When I started, actually the first article that I published almost didn't get published because it was an issue on gender. There's an issue, a journal on gender, and nobody was talking about boys. You know, the issue, and, you know, concerns about girls in classes and girls being talked over in class and not being able to get the floor in class, you know, for conversation. And you know, that's a real issue. It was a real issue then. It's a real issue now. But nobody was talking about it. And I think what's been encouraging is people saying, look, you know, there is an issue here with male students in class. We have to talk about it, and we have to see whether there are ways of inviting them in, and whether we're creating limits on what they can read and write that just cause them to say, hey, school's not for me. So if it's made just a little bit of a dent in that, I'm really happy about that.
We want to remind everybody that this interview with Thomas Newkirk is sponsored by Chuzito.com, that's search and learn, because the web is not a library and search engines are not librarians. Go to Chuzito.com, that's Chuzito.com. Let's talk about the types of information that boys want to research, they want to integrate with, or they want to interact with. How are we doing a good job of setting the table so that there's information out there that's readily available, that's going to interest them, build their literacy skills, help them feel better about reading? Are we doing a good job of that?
Well, I think there's a lot more good nonfiction out there. I think there's been a big push that way, and that's been encouraging. And I think boys have always been really interested in kind of extreme forms of informational writing. By extremes, I mean every boy goes through a dinosaur phase. And I think every boy in this culture longs, you know, regrets that dinosaurs still aren't available, that we still can't, you know, that we miss dinosaurs, sharks, spiders, you know. I think that there's almost a romance of information. There's certain kinds of informational writing that it's so exciting and so maybe dangerous that I think boys have always been attracted to that. When I was a kid, Ripley's Believe It or Not, and Ripley was a hugely popular, you know, earlier in this in the 20th century, just these fascinating facts. So I think boys have this, you know, love of information, and particularly of a certain kind of information that kind of is about danger, is about things that are threatening, and certainly about these great dinosaurs. And if anybody's ever walked through the Museum of Natural History in New York and seen those dinosaur skeletons, just to think, God, I just wish I could have been there.
Yeah. I know. My son is in the dinosaur phase now. He loves it. And for me, it was Choose Your Own Adventure books.
Uh-huh.
Incredible. I mean, that was the only book. Those were the only books that I wanted to run up to my room to read, because I didn't know if I was going to, you know, swim through a cave, underwater cave, or if I was going to be climbing a mountain. I mean, that was what was so exciting.
Oh, yeah. I think, for me, it's like, you know, discovering this all about dinosaurs, and this Roy Chapman Andrews, who went to the Gobi Desert and was discovering dinosaurs and, you know, digging up these dinosaur fossils, you know, I thought, God, I'd love to be there.
You know, I know that this is not really a part of what we're talking about today, but I can't help but think, Tom, that, you know, it's so heavily one-sided when it comes to the gender of educators in our classrooms around the country, and really around the world for that matter, that it is female dominated in that sense, and that there are very few men that go into education. And you just can't help but think that this part of a boy's experience in education sets them up to say, well, why would I go into education? It wasn't something that I fully enjoyed, and I'm going to go look for my adventure, as we put it, somewhere else.
Yeah, and I think there are other things that we might do as a culture that tell boys that they're not nurturers. Like, you know, I'm thinking like, you know, having boys babysit or having boys take care of younger kids. And I know in Japanese schools there's much more of a culture of having, say, older boys help out younger boys. And I think that's something that we could do more of in our schools. Because I think we send a message to boys that you're not to be trusted with kids. Girls can be trusted with kids as a caretaker. But I think from a very early age we tell boys, you know, we don't trust you taking care of somebody younger. That's not universally true, but I think that they get the message. And so if there's a profession that deals with caregiving, you know, nursing or teaching, whether we've sent the message to boys that, hey, this isn't right for you. You know, this is not something you should be doing.
Tom, let's close with this. If you were writing Misreading Masculinity today in 2016, what would be different about the table of contents, and or would it remain exactly the same, sadly so, because we've not progressed?
Well, I think one thing I would do is become much more familiar with the media culture that the boys are working in, because I think that's also a part of the answer, that to be, you know, creating all these possibilities for creating digital stories and writing digitally. I think that was coming into fashion at that time, but I think now there's so many possibilities of integrating, you know, music and video and creating your own stories. There's one video called Ron Super Slider. I have the wrong title of it, but these kids who create this big long slide, and they make this video of it, and like 7 million people watched it. You know, that's power. These new media tools have power for telling stories, and I think I would have liked to have done more with that.
Well, it's a great piece of literary work on your part, and I know that it's spurred a lot of conversation still to this day, and we need to continue to have these conversations. We want to thank Thomas Newkirk. We want to also thank our sponsor, Chuzito.com. That's search and learn, because the web is not a library and search engines are not librarians. Go to Chuzito.com. That's Chuzito.com. Once again, I'm Dr. Rod Berger. Join us for our next cup of coffee as we continue to have conversations in education that matter to you. I'm Dr. Rod Berger, and this is Coffee.